Good morning. This is Kess with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Tuesday, March 14th. We're going to begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Defense Attorneys Challenge Lack of African American Jurors. Decatur. Two jury trials were delayed Monday in felony cases after assistant public defenders asked for new jury pools because there were no African Americans among the potential jurors. Scott Reuter filed the motion in the case of Stephen D. Smith, a 28-year-old Decatur man facing three felony charges, including attempted first-degree murder for allegedly shooting his girlfriend's ex-husband on July 28th in an East Side alley. Smith is African-American. The alleged victim is white. Thomas Wheeler filed an identical motion in the case of Sean Dandridge, 38, who is charged with a Class X count of armed habitual criminal, for allegedly possessing a firearm while having two prior felony convictions. Dandridge is African American. There are no victims in the case. The key eyewitnesses who testified on Monday is also black. In both cases, the judges denied the motions after hearing arguments from defense attorneys and prosecutors and testimony from the jury manager. There is a specific statutory requirement that the defendant meet the burden of proof that the jury panel was improperly selected or drawn, said Macon County Circuit Court Judge R.C. Bullinger. Reuter argued in his motion that after it became clear that there were no black people in the jury panel for his trial, it was determined that there were no African American jurors in the entire jury panel called for this week of trials. Out of our jury pool of 23 jurors, there were no African-American jurors, Reuter argued before Bullinger on Monday afternoon after the first four jurors were selected for the Smith attempted murder case. Bullinger acknowledged that he had never dealt with this issue before. One of the prosecutors in the Smith case said she had also never been challenged on this specific issue, while the other one said she had some experience. Reuter said that if the percentage of African Americans in the community had been reflected in that pool, there would have been four black potential jurors, not to mention other minorities who were also missing from the pool. He said he also discovered there were no African Americans sent to the other ongoing criminal case or the civil case being tried in the courthouse Monday. The remarkable inference is there is a systematic exclusion of this group, Reuter said. Assistant State's Attorney Lindsay Shelton, lead prosecutor of the Smith case, argued that there were no facts to support a systematic exclusion of African Americans from the jury pool. She read the names of six individuals in this week's pool who reported they were black on interview forms, with two others not reporting their races. Reuter acknowledged that he had not checked the forms to determine the races of the prospective jurors in the pool. Jury manager Jeannie Berger testified that the jury pool for each week is drawn from five lists, which are selected without prejudice toward any group of people. The names are drawn from rosters of registered voters, licensed drivers, disabled and unemployed people, and those holding state ID cards. She said names are randomly pulled from the five lists by a software program, Judicial Systems Incorporated, which selects every 13th name or something like that, Berger said. We have no control of which names are pulled, she said. Berger testified that she did not normally see the faces of the potential jurors because other employees checked them in while she was doing other duties. She said this week's pool included five who identified themselves as African Americans. Two of those individuals brought in medical notices, Berger testified, that left us with three, which were all sent to Judge A.G. Weber's trial. They all ended up at the civil trial, Reuter asked. How are the jurors selected for the trials? Berger said the computer randomly selects which potential jurors are sent to each courtroom. Reuter said he was concerned that for a seemingly random setup, there were so few African Americans in the jury pool. He said there should have been 13 or 14 jurors in the pool because that would be about 17% of the 80 potential jurors, matching the census figures. But Shelton argued that there was nothing unfair which would create a systematic exclusion. It is very clear everything is computer-generated, Shelton said. They are not hand-picked at all. In his ruling, Bullinger said the legal standard is not met just because an identifiable group is underrepresented on a jury panel. There is no evidence to support that the jury manager or any of her staff attempted to manipulate the selection process, the judge said. Shortly after Berger left Bullinger's fifth-floor courtroom, she appeared as a witness in the Dandridge case in the third-floor courtroom of Associate Judge Jeffrey Geisler. Drawing from one of the Illinois Supreme Court cases that Bullinger used upstairs, Assistant State's Attorney Kate Kurtz said the defendant must show the group that is allegedly being excluded is a distinctive group. The representation of this group in jury panels is not fair in relation to the population ratio in the community, and the underrepresentation is due to systematic exclusion in the jury selection process. Kurtz said the defense failed to show it was a systematic exclusion. She cited Berger's testimony in which she said she does not receive names by race and she does not select anybody herself. The system has been in place in Macon County for 10 years. That's exactly what we have here. It's pure chance, Kurtz said. Geisler said the most important requirement the defendant must show to establish a case for discharging the jury panel was that the exclusion was systematic. I don't believe there was any evidence to show that, Geisler said. The motion is denied. Both trials will resume today in the Macon County Court's facility. Snow brings crashes, delays, Decatur. With the official start of spring just a week away, winter decided to go down swinging in central Illinois. About 3 inches of snow fell in Decatur on Monday, with slick roads leading to multiple traffic crashes during the morning commute. A 3-vehicle crash on U.S. 36 over Lake Decatur caused the bridge to be closed for several hours. Drivers are encouraged to use caution again today, as lower temperatures overnight could cause refreezing. It is something that people really need to be aware of and not think, okay, no more snow, we're good. It's the leftover stuff, the yucky stuff that nobody likes to drive on, said James Auden, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Lincoln. The crash that closed U.S. 36 involved a Chevy Trailblazer that was eastbound when the 35-year-old male driver lost control and struck the side of a semi-truck traveling west, Decatur Police Sergeant Brian Earls said. The impact caused a diesel fuel leak from the semi, which led to the lengthy closure of westbound lanes as crews cleaned up the area. After striking the semi, the Trailblazer went back into the eastbound lanes and hit a Toyota Camry driven by a 37-year-old woman. The crash occurred shortly before 7:30 a.m. Eastbound lanes of traffic reopened a little before 9 a.m., while the westbound lanes were closed until 11 a.m. The drivers of the Chevy and Toyota were taken to a hospital and treated for injuries not considered life-threatening. Among the many drivers who experienced delays because of the crash was Jim Wilkerson, Director of Marketing and Public Relations at Brinkoeder & Associates. Wilkerson said he was more than 40 minutes late getting to work Monday from his home near Decatur Airport. First, his westbound sedan came up on the accident minutes after it happened, and later, after turning around, his progress was slowed driving north on Airport Road by other vehicles trying to avoid the scene. I ended up getting stopped for 20 to 30 minutes on U.S. 36 and saw the ambulance arrive, Wilkerson said. One of the cars was pretty messed up with the whole front end smashed. I hope everybody is okay. A pickup truck crashed into a barrier on the 22nd Street overpass, also known as the Staley Viaduct, about 7 a.m., causing some traffic to be rerouted, said Lyle Meador, Decatur Fire Department Deputy Chief. The truck had minor front end damage, but the driver apparently suffered no injuries. Another crash, about 7:45 a.m. on Illinois 121 near Interstate 72, sent 3 people to the hospital with injuries, Meador said. The incident involved a car with an 18-year-old male driver and sport utility vehicle with a driver and passenger who were women in their 60s. Decatur police were unable to provide more details of those crashes Monday evening. City and county crews spread salt throughout the day Monday, hoping to prevent the roads from becoming slick again overnight. City workers began at 1 a.m. Most of their work had wrapped up by the afternoon, but a few were expected to continue until 11 p.m., said Dan Mendenhall, acting municipal services manager. It's kind of a getting close to spring winter storm where it can't make up its mind what it's going to do, Mendenhall said. But, he said, we're ready for anything. County Highway Engineer Bruce Bird said his department began work at 4 a.m. with most of the roads cleared and salted by early afternoon. Later this week, more snow is possible Thursday night and Friday, but by later in the day Friday, the weather is expected to warm up. Highs in the 50s are predicted through the weekend. With the mercurial nature of this season's weather patterns, who would expect anything different? We've had such a mild winter. Each snow event we've had has been on the minimal side. We didn't issue any winter storm warnings at all this winter. That's unusual for us, Auden said. It's just been a weird year, but we didn't get through March without having snow. Challengers question incumbents at Decatur School Board Forum. The differences among the candidates for Decatur School Board showed up strongest in the final minutes of a forum held Monday at MacArthur High School. Three of the candidates who have been campaigning together called into question the records of the incumbents, saying a change within leadership is needed. Four seats are open on the board, with seven candidates running along with write-in Janice Gavin, who did not participate in the forum. Challenger Beth Nolan said the time has come to hold the board accountable, specifically questioning the attendance record of incumbent B.A. Butts at a committee meeting during his term. "I'm ready to work hard," Nolan said. "We cannot waste another 4 years with the same expectations. It's time for a change on the Board of Education." Butts responded by saying that the team members have to make decisions, even if those choices aren't the most popular ones. He said it's about how the game is being played. "I've played the game fairly," Butts said. "I've taken the high road. I have no other reason to run except for the kids." Beth Creighton, who has been campaigning with Nolan and Kendall Briscoe, said the community has choices and can elect all new board members. "The board has been working together only recently for the first time in 4 years," Creighton said. "Change isn't easy," Creighton said. "I'm okay with it being hard. The hardest thing is also the right thing. I'm going to work to be the change I want to see in the schools. In the end, the students are worth it." Incumbent Alita Graham said running on a platform of change can be a popular thing to do, as she did when she first ran for the board 4 years ago. "The difficulty comes when it's time to make a change," she said. Graham said change takes time and she wants to continue working in that direction. "Two cannot make a change, nor can three of you," Graham said. "It takes a majority. Change does not mean improvement. It takes more than 4 years. I have a passion and commitment to bring meaningful change." The Reverend Courtney Carson, another candidate, said board members should advocate to engage young people in the creative process. "We cannot show divisiveness," Carson said. "If we invest in fighting, we take the focus off young people." Candidate Al Scheider said he has been volunteering in the schools, which is something others need to do more. "Good things are happening," Scheider said. "There is so much more we need to do." Briscoe was critical of the district failing to develop a curriculum in the past 4 years. She said the board only recently began discussions about how to develop a curriculum for the district. The candidates had earlier been asked about developing the curriculum as they took questions from a panel of students and other audience members. Students in the district's media class produced the forum by filming it and serving on the panel. The panel included Eisenhower sophomore Kara Appleton, MacArthur senior Tabrina Exridge, and recent MacArthur graduate Alia Buck. Briscoe said the board should not play a leading role in developing the curriculum of the district. She said it should let the superintendent execute the development after it sets a vision. "The board has been accused of micromanaging the superintendents," Briscoe said. Criticism of the current board increased with the actions towards former Superintendent Lisa Taylor, who resigned last spring and took a job in Hayworth. Four board members were perceived to be against extending her contract. The board is in the process of selecting a new superintendent with the intention to make its pick before the April 4th election. Bobby Williams and Michael Dugan are serving as co-interim superintendents. Boots said he would like to see a curriculum in place developed by the teachers. He said task forces have worked in the past. "I'd like to see us get back to that concept," Boots said. "Then it can go to the administrative level. That's what we would approve." Carson said the superintendent should be held accountable in the process. He said a curriculum would most help first-year teachers. "Teachers will take a look and want to come to Decatur," Carson said. Creighton said the board should take a high-level approach to look ahead with a vision. "It should trust that the people hired to work for the district are doing their jobs well, particularly as the curriculum is developed." Graham said employees should have what they need to be successful. She said curriculum development should be driven by those using it. Nolan indicated she knows how to set and implement goals. She added that the administration and staff should use what works best for them. Schneider said input should be gathered from many sources, including the students, as was discussed earlier in the forum. He said greater committee involvement can help produce the best curriculum. Seniors call upon childhood experience in Spelling Bee, Decatur. Joan Brewer has always liked spelling. As a child in Wisconsin, she represented her class in the school's spell down during her first attempt. Although she did not move on to the next level of competition, she had been bitten by the spelling bee bug. "I even coached my daughter in spelling when she was in school," she said. Brewer, 65, was given another chance as a speller during the East Central Illinois Local Senior Spelling Bee on Monday afternoon at the Macon County Senior Center. Competitors older than 50 years old were invited to the local event. The event was hosted by State Representative Shu Schreer, Democrat from Decatur. The competition is a program from the Association of Illinois Senior Centers and the Illinois Department on Aging. Schreer has been part of the Senior Spelling Bee for 4 years. "This is a challenge for them," she said. "Some of them take it real light and just enjoy it. Others take it very serious." Aaron Valentine, 59, won this year with the word osteoporosis. Valentine and the runner-up, Ada Elder, 73, will represent the area during the regional competition. A location is pending for the event, which will be in June. Those winners will advance to the state competition at the Illinois State Fair in August. 3 years ago, Brewer competed at the state level. "They can be pretty nasty and mean," she said. During Monday afternoon's bee, 7 contestants competed in several rounds of spelling. The event was similar to spelling bees experienced at the junior high level, although in a relaxed atmosphere. The contestants were required to say the word, spell it, and then repeat the word. New to the senior spelling bee is the 30-second reconsideration. The contestants had 30 seconds to change their minds after spelling a word. Like most younger spellers, the seniors asked for definitions and for the words to be used in sentences. The words are chosen from the Illinois State Senior Center Spelling Bee, distributed to all competitions. Each word is selected from the list by the pronouncer. Many in the crowd were surprised when the pronouncer and WANT TV News anchor Sean Streety gave the first word, chameleon. "I thought they'd be simple words like cat," said audience member Glenn Edelman. "I didn't know they'd be serious." Difficult words were part of the competition, such as pachyderm, irrepressible, and epitome. Other words were complicated but familiar to many of the contestants, including emphysema and ophthalmologist. Valentine came to the competition because she wanted to win after a devastating defeat more than 40 years ago. As a child, she spelled the wrong form of capital during a B, missing her chance to advance to the next level. "I went home and cried my eyes out. I was never in a B again," she said. "This is kind of to redeem the loss I had in junior high." Man faces battery charge. Attack may cause partial blindness. Decatur. A 24-year-old Decatur man is being held in jail on a $50,000 bond after he was arrested for allegedly kicking a woman in the face repeatedly, sending her to the hospital for treatment of multiple facial fractures and possible blindness in one eye. Cassio Devine, allegedly, was at a residence in the 800 block of East Rogers Avenue between 3 and 4 a.m. Sunday when he became upset about social media posts his female acquaintance had made. Cassio punched her several times in the face with a closed fist, the victim told police. After she fell to the floor, Cassio then kicked her approximately 8 times in the head, said a probable cause affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer Joseph Kish. A young child told police she saw the suspect punch and kick the victim several times. An adult relative of the victim said Cassio told her he wished he would have killed the victim. An emergency room physician at Decatur Memorial Hospital told police the victim may lose use of her right eye. He said he was going to transfer her to another hospital for specialized treatment. Kish observed that the victim's right eye was bruised and swollen shut. The swelling was about the size of a golf ball. Blood was coming out from her swollen eye. The victim also suffered bruises and abrasions on her back. Devine was arrested about 11 a.m. Sunday and booked into the jail on a preliminary charge of aggravated domestic battery. He is due in court for his arraignment by Monday. Devine has 3 prior criminal convictions, including a 2010 conviction for a manufactured delivery of cocaine, for which he was sentenced to 6 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections. 2 men accused of shooting dog with crossbow. Decatur. 2 men were arrested Friday and booked into the Macon County Jail on charges of aggravated animal cruelty for allegedly shooting a dog with a crossbow, causing life-threatening injuries that required surgery at a veterinary hospital. Macon County sheriff's deputies and animal control officers were sent to a house in the 2000 block of West Leafland Avenue about 8:40 p.m. February 21st on the report of the wounding of a corgi mix named Pippin. The dog owners reported that Pippin was in the backyard when it was shot in the right shoulder area with a mini-type crossbow, said a probable cause affidavit by Sheriff Sergeant Lou Ann Holland. They said there were three people at their neighbor's house at the time, later identified as Dalton Zinders, 20, Dakota Letty Wilbur, 19, and a 23-year-old woman. Zinders told police that Letty Wilbur and the woman were at his house that night but denied shooting any arrows at the dog and didn't see anyone who did that, Holland wrote in her statement. Pippin, bleeding and apparently suffering tremendous pain, was transported to Northgate Pet Clinic, then to University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine for removal of the arrow. The veterinary bills topped $3,000, mostly for the surgery, with more appointments pending. After a Crime Stoppers tipster identified Zinders and Letty Wilbur as possible suspects, they were re-interviewed. Zinders told police Letty Wilbur had admitted to him about shooting the neighbor's dog with an arrow from a mini crossbow. The woman, who was at the house with the two suspects the night of the incident, told police that Dalton fired the first shot that missed the dog and then handed the crossbow to Dakota, telling him to shoot the dog because he doesn't miss. She said Dakota shot the second arrow and it hit the dog, causing it to whine in pain. The woman said she was also present when Dalton lied to the neighbors about what happened to their dog. After he was taken into custody Friday, Letty Wilbur admitted he was at Dalton's house when he got out his mini crossbow and tried to shoot the neighbor's dog with an arrow because he hates it. When he missed, Zinders handed him the mini crossbow and asked him to shoot the dog because he doesn't miss. Bond was set for each of the men at $10,000 on Saturday. As condition of their bonds, they were each ordered to refrain from being the primary caretaker for any animal. They are both free after posting cash bail. They are due in court April 11th for their arraignments. ADM touts economy boost from bio-based products, Decatur. Researchers at Archer Daniels Midland Company are taking part in a transformation that could help to boost the Central Illinois economy. ADM is looking into the value of producing more bio-based products, said Paul Bloom, the company's vice president, process and chemical research. It's not going to be across the board, Bloom said. It's going to be the ones that really drive value. During a tour Monday of ADM's Randall Research Center in Decatur, Bloom explained how ADM is partnering on a project with DuPont to find some of the unmet needs in the industry by developing a plastic bottle using furandicarboxylic methyl ester, or FDM. By using bioproducts for the bottle, Bloom said the shelf life of products can improve by keeping carbon dioxide in and keeping oxygen out. The material helps meet the unmet needs the packaging industry has been interested in, Bloom said. It's finally being delivered. FDM had not been available at commercial scale and a reasonable cost until last year. ADM is working to scale up the production of enough materials at a pilot demonstration plant in Decatur to meet the needs of all test markets, Bloom said. The project is an example of the type of innovation that can lead to spark the development of the bioprocessing industry, said State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican from Mahomet. Nearly 20,000 jobs are estimated to come from the new industry, Rose said. We want as many of those as possible here in Central Illinois, Rose said. It's huge. It's the future. Combining the assets in Decatur, such as its agribusiness processors, including ADM and Tate and Lyle, and transportation network highlighted by the Midwest Inland Port with what is offered in Champaign, provides a unique economic development opportunity along with the farm ground in between, Rose said. The Integrated Bioprocessing Research Lab in Champaign will equip the next generation with the knowledge, education, and skills they need to be successful in the bioprocessing industry. We have something nobody else in the world has to offer, said Rose, who helped last year to secure $26 million from the state to construct the lab in Champaign. Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity Director Sean McCarthy and Illinois Department of Agriculture Director Raymond Poe were among the participants in the tour, which included ADM's intermodal rail facility and commodity trading floor. The Agriculture Department is interested in supporting the initiative, Poe said. McCarthy said economic development begins at the social level, so being able to commercialize the industrial side of the agriculture industry will continue to be important. Our opinion, the trouble beneath, we must fix Macon County bridges. That some Macon County bridges are in really bad shape shouldn't be much of a surprise to anyone who drives here. Our roadways and spots are bursting with potholes and other hazards. Some necessitate NASCAR-style swerving. What is surprising, or maybe alarming is a more appropriate word, really, is that the Federal Highway Administration considers about 13% of bridges in the country structurally deficient, as reported in Sunday's Herald and Review. When it comes to bridges, like a lot of things in life, it's the problems you can't see that will get you in trouble. Take a gander under virtually any bridge older than a decade and you'll find rust and cracking. Some of that is standard wear and tear that can be fixed. The issue becomes an epidemic when small things aren't addressed and mushroom into something much more serious. None of the bridges in the Herald and Review report are in imminent danger of collapse, but they will only deteriorate more if we don't take making repairs or replacing them seriously. And we should. Our region's status as a transportation hub is too important. Closing even one bridge or banning heavy trucks would be catastrophic. Such problems have been easy to overlook because infrastructure isn't exactly an exciting topic. It's the reason municipal officials sometimes struggle with getting support for improvements to things like sewer lines and lift stations. Most taxpayers know those are important, but we'd rather just assume everything will always be working just fine. That's why President Donald Trump's proposal to put $1 trillion into infrastructure across our nation is so interesting. A cross-country trip by train, plane, or automobile proves the point. Transportation hubs like Penn Station in New York and to a lesser extent O'Hare in Chicago are outdated. Roads are crumbling. Projects have been shelved for too long. The American Society of Civil Engineers ranks U.S. infrastructure at D+, although since they benefit from improvement projects, they're not exactly an objective bystander. To be fair, we have a dog in this fight, too. Caterpillar Incorporated Decatur's plant could prosper from all the equipment needed for a Trump plan. By his estimation, millions of jobs could be created by relying on a mix of private and public funds to start building. America has spent approximately $6 trillion in the Middle East. All the while, our infrastructure at home is crumbling, said Trump, who, as a candidate, was a frequent critic of lagging infrastructure across the U.S., especially airports. With the $6 trillion, we could have rebuilt our country twice, and maybe even three times if we had people who had the ability to negotiate. We'll wait and see about how the president plans to get the job done. Maybe the state will step up. Maybe there will be a fuel tax. Maybe there's another solution. But take a drive on one of the bridges listed as structurally deficient and think about what happens if we don't do anything at all. Local briefs. Mattoon. Fire destroys trailer. The cause of a fire that destroyed a trailer in the Lakeland Mobile Estates trailer park Monday morning has not been determined. Firefighters went to 4808 Paraside Road just after 7:30 a.m. and found smoke and flames showing from unit number 24 at the park, according to the Mattoon Fire Department. The resident of the trailer was home, but no one was injured. The trailer was described as a total loss. The Charleston Fire Department, Mattoon Police and Public Works, and utility companies helped with the fire. Springfield Honor Flight Meeting. Land of Lincoln Honor Flight of Springfield will hold its rescheduled annual meeting at 9:30 a.m. Saturday, March 25th, in Lakeside Christian Church, 226 Toronto Road, Springfield. The public is welcome. The meeting will recap the past year's six flights, discuss plans for future events, and include a raffle, door prizes, and light refreshments. Land of Lincoln Honor Flight is a nonprofit that coordinates visits to Washington, D.C. for veterans of World War II, Korea, and Vietnam Wars. Applications for participation for veterans and guardian escorts are being accepted. Applications and criteria are available online at www.landoflincolnhonorflight.org or by phone or email to John Dust at 309-339-0227 or honorflightguy at AOL.com. And that website is www.landoflincolnhonorflight.org. All one word there in the middle. All right, we're going to take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, March 14th. Please stay tuned.